I finally fell asleep about 2 in the morning. If Mr. Crepsley had come, I would have been completely defenceless. But luckily, when I woke in the morning, there was no sign of his having been, and Madame Octa was still resting in the wardrobe. I felt a lot better that Wednesday, especially when I popped by the old theatre after school and saw the sick Dufreak had left. The cars and vans were gone. No trace of the freak show remained. I'd done it. Madame Octa was mine. I celebrated by buying a pizza, ham and pepperoni. Mum and Dad wanted to know what the special occasion was. I said I just felt like something different. Offered them and Annie a slice, and they left it at that. I fed the scraps to Madame Octa, and she loved them. She ran around the cage, licking up every last crumb. I made a note in my diary, for a special treat, a piece of pizza. I spent the next couple of days getting her used to her new home. I didn't let her out of the cage, but I carried it round the room so she could see every corner and get to know the place. I didn't want her to be nervous when I finally freed her. I talked to her all the time, telling her about my life and family and home. I told her how much I admired her and the sort of food I was going to get her and the type of tricks we were going to do. She might not have understood everything I said, but she seemed to. I went to the library after school on Thursday and Friday and read as much about spiders as I could find. There was all sorts of stuff I hadn't known, like they can have up to 8 eyes, and the threads of their webs are gluey fluids which harden when they're let out into the air. But none of the books mentioned performing spiders, or ones with telepathic powers, and I couldn't find any pictures of spiders like Madame Octa. It looked like none of the people who wrote these books had seen a spider like her. She was unique. When Saturday came, I decided it was time to let her out of her cage and try a few tricks. I had practiced with the flute and could play a few very simple tunes quite well. The hard part was sending thoughts to Madame Octa while playing. It was going to be tricky, but I felt I was up to it. I closed my door and shut my windows. It was Saturday afternoon. Dad was working and Mum had gone to the shops with Annie. I was all alone. So if anything went wrong, it would be entirely my fault, and I would be the only one to suffer. I placed the cage in the middle of the floor. I hadn't fed Madame Octa since last night. I figured she might not want to perform if she was full of food. Animals can be lazy, just like humans. I removed the cloth, put the flute in my mouth, turned the key, and opened the tiny door to the cage. I stepped back and squatted down low so she could see me. Madame Octa did nothing for a while. Then she crept to the door, paused, and sniffed the air. She looked too fat to squeeze through the gap, and I began to think I must have overfed her. But somehow, she managed to suck her sides in and ease out. She sat on the carpet in front of the cage, her big round belly throbbing. I thought she might walk around the cage to check the room out, but she didn't show the faintest sign of having any interest in the room. Her eyes were glued to me. I gulped loudly and tried not to let her sense my fear. It was difficult, but I managed not to shake or cry. The flute had slipped a couple of centimeters from my lips while I was watching her, but I was still holding it. It was time to start playing, so I pressed it back between my lips and prepared to blow. That was when she made her move. In one giant leap, she sprang across the room. She flew forward, up into the air, jaws open, fangs ready, hairy legs twitching, straight at my unprotected face. Chapter 19. If she had connected, she would have sunk her fangs into me and I would have died. But luck was on my side, and instead of landing on flesh, she slammed against the end of the flute and went flying off to the side. She landed in a ball and was dazed for a couple of seconds. Reacting rapidly, aware that my life depended on speed, I stuck the flute between my lips and played like a madman. My mouth was dry, but I blew regardless, not daring to lick my lips. Madame Octa cocked her head when she heard the music. She struggled to her legs and swayed from side to side as though drunk. I sneaked a quick breath, then started playing a slower tune, which wouldn't tire my fingers or lungs. "Hello, Madame Octa," I said inside my head, shutting my eyes and concentrating. "My name's Darren Shan. I've told you that before, but I don't know if you heard. I'm not even sure if you can hear it now. I'm your new owner. I'm going to treat you real good and feed you loads of insects and meat, but only if you are good and do everything I tell you and don't attack me again." She had stopped swaying and was staring at me. I wasn't sure if she was listening to my thoughts or planning her next leap. "I want you to stand on your back legs now," I told her. "I want you to stand on your two back legs and take a little bow." For a few seconds she didn't respond. I went on playing and thinking, asking her to stand, then commanding her, then begging her. Finally, when I was almost out of breath, she raised herself and stood on her two legs, the way I wanted. Then she took a little bow and relaxed, awaiting my next order. She was obeying me. The next order I gave was for her to crawl back into her cage. She did as I bid, and this time I only had to think it once. As soon as she was inside, I closed the door and fell back on my bum, letting the flute fall from my mouth. The shock I'd got when she jumped at me. Oh, my heart was beating so fast I was afraid it was going to run up my neck and leap out of my mouth. I lay on the floor for ages, staring at the spider, thinking about how close to death I'd come. That should have been warning enough. Any sensible person would have left the door shut and forgot about playing with such a deadly pet. It was too dangerous. What if she hadn't hit the flute? What if Mum had come home and found me dead on the floor? What if the spider then attacked her or Dad or Annie? Only the world's dumbest person would run a risk like that again. Step forward, Darren Shan. It was crazy, but I couldn't stop myself. Besides, the way I saw it, there was no point having stolen her if I was going to keep her locked up in a silly old cage. I was a bit cleverer this time. I unlocked the door but didn't open it. Instead, I played the flute and told her to push it open. She did, and when she came out, she seemed as harmless as a kitten, and did everything I'd communicated. I made her do lots of tricks. Made her hop about the room like a kangaroo, then had her hang from the ceiling and draw pictures with her webs. Next, I got her lifting weights, a pen, a box of matches, a marble. After that, I told her to sit in one of my remote-controlled cars. I turned it on, and it looked like she was driving. I crashed it into a pile of books, but made her jump off at the last moment so she wasn't hurt. I played with her for about an hour and would have happily continued all afternoon, but I heard Mum arriving home and knew she would think it odd if I stayed up in my room all day. The last thing I wanted was her or Dad prying into my private affairs. So, I stuck Madame Octa back in the wardrobe and trotted downstairs, trying to look as natural as possible.
"Were you playing a CD up there?"
Mum asked. She had four bags full of clothes and hats, which she and Annie were unpacking on the kitchen table.
"No,"
I said.
"I thought I heard music,"
she said.
"I was playing a flute,"
I told her, trying to sound casual. She stopped unpacking.
"You?"
she asked.
"Playing a flute?"
"I do know how to play one," I said.
"You taught me when I was 5 years old, remember?" "I remember,"
she laughed.
"I also remember when you were six and told me flutes were for girls. You swore you were never going to look at one again."
I shrugged as though it was no big thing.
"I changed my mind,"
I said. "I found a flute on the way home from school yesterday and got to wondering if I could still play."
"Where did you find it?"
she asked. "On the road.
I hope you washed it out before you put it in your mouth. There's no telling where it might have been."
"I washed it," I lied.
"This is a lovely surprise,"
she smiled, then ruffled my hair and gave my cheek a big wet kiss.
"Hey, quit it,"
I yelled.
"We'll make a Mozart out of you yet,"
she said.
"I can see it now, you playing a piano in a huge concert hall, dressed in a beautiful white suit, your father and I in the front row."
"Get real, Mum,"
I chuckled.
"It's only a flute."
"From small acorns, oak trees grow," she said.
"He's as thick as an oak tree,"
Annie giggled. I stuck my tongue out at her in response. The next few days were great. I played with Madame Octa whenever I could, feeding her every afternoon. She only needed one meal a day, as long as it was a large one, and I didn't have to worry about locking my bedroom door because Mum and Dad agreed not to enter when they heard me practicing the flute. I considered telling Annie about Madame Octa, but decided to wait a while longer. I was getting on well with the spider, but could tell she was still uneasy around me. I wouldn't bring Annie in until I was sure it was completely safe. My schoolwork improved during the next week, and so did my goal scoring. I scored 28 goals between Monday and Friday. Even Mr. Dalton was impressed.
"You're good, Max, in class, and your prowess on the field," he said. "You could turn into the world's first professional footballer cum university professor, a cross between Pelé and Einstein."
I knew he was only pulling my leg, but it was nice of him to say it all the same. It took ages to work up the nerve to let Madame Octa climb up my body and over my face, but I finally tried it on Friday afternoon. I played my best song and didn't let her start until I told her several times what I wanted her to do. When I thought we were ready, I gave her the nod and she began creeping up the leg of my trousers. It was fine until she reached my neck. The feel of those long, thin, hairy legs almost caused me to drop the flute. I would have been a dead duck if I had, because she was in the perfect place to sink her fangs. Luckily, my nerve held and I went on playing. She crawled over my left ear and up to the top of my head, where she lay down for a rest. My scalp itched beneath her, but I had sense enough not to try scratching it. I studied myself in the mirror and grinned. She looked like one of those French hats, a beret. I made her slide down my face and dangle from my nose on one of her web strings. I didn't let her into my mouth, but I got her to swing from side to side, like she'd done with Mr. Crepsley, and had her tickle my chin with her legs. I didn't let her tickle me too much, in case I started laughing and dropped the flute. When I put her back in her cage that Friday night, I felt like a king, like nothing could ever go wrong, that my whole life was going to be perfect. I was doing well in school and at football, and had the sort of pet any boy would trade all his worldly goods for. I couldn't have been happier if I'd won the lottery or a chocolate factory. That, of course, was when everything went wrong, and the whole world crashed down around my ears. Chapter 20. Steve popped over for a visit late Saturday afternoon. We hadn't said much to each other all week, and he was the last person I was expecting. Mum let him in and called me downstairs. I saw him when I was halfway down, paused, then shouted for him to come up. He gazed about my room as though he hadn't been here for months.
"I've almost forgotten what this place looks like," he said.
"Don't be silly," I said. "You were here a couple of weeks ago."
"It seems longer."
He sat on the bed and turned his eyes on me. His face was serious and lonely.
"Why have you been avoiding me?"
he asked softly.
"What do you mean?"
I pretended I didn't know what he was talking about.
"You've been steering clear of me these past 2 weeks," he said. "It wasn't obvious at first, but each day you've been spending less time with me. You didn't even pick me when we were playing basketball in PE last Thursday."
"You're not very good at basketball," I said. It was a lame excuse, but I couldn't think of a better one.
"I was confused at first," Steve said. "But then I figured it out. You didn't get lost the night of the freak show, did you? You stuck around, up in the balcony probably, and saw what happened between me and Verhorsten."
"I saw nothing of the sort," I snapped.
"No?"
he asked.
"No,"
I lied.
"You didn't see anything?"
"No."
"You didn't see me talking to Verhorsten?"
"No!"
"You didn't..." "Look, Steve," I interrupted. "Whatever happened between you and Mr. Crepsley is your business. I wasn't there, didn't see it, don't know what you're talking about. Now if..." "Don't lie to me, Darren," he said. I'm not lying, I lied. Then how did you know I was talking about Mr. Crepsley? He asked. Because...
I bit my tongue.
I said I was talking to Fur Horston.
Steve smiled.
Unless you were there, how would you know that Fur Horston and Larton Crepsley are one and the same?
My shoulders sagged. I sat on the bed beside Steve.
Okay, I said. I admit it. I was in the balcony.
How much did you see and hear? Steve asked.
Everything. I couldn't see what he was doing when he was sucking out your blood, or hear what he was saying, but apart from that...
Everything, Steve finished with a sigh.
That's why you've been avoiding me, because he said I was evil.
Partly, I said.
But mostly because of what you said. Steve, you asked him to turn you into a vampire. What if he had turned you into one, and you'd come after me? Most vampires go after people they know first, don't they?
In books and films, yes, Steve said.
This is different. This is real life. I wouldn't have hurt you, Darren.
Maybe, I said.
Maybe not. The point is, I don't want to find out. I don't want to be friends with you anymore. You could be dangerous. What if you met another vampire and this one granted your wish? Or what if Mr. Crepsley was right and you're really evil and...
I'm not evil! Steve shouted and shoved me back on the bed. He leapt on my chest and stuck his fingers in my face.
Take that back, he roared. Take that back, or so help me, I'll jerk your head off and...
I take it back, I take it back,
I shrieked. Steve was heavy on my chest, his face flushed and furious. I would have said anything to get him off. He sat, perched on my chest a few seconds longer, then grunted and rolled off. I sat up, gasping, rubbing my face where he'd poked it.
Sorry,
Steve mumbled. That was over the top.
But I'm upset. It hurt, what Mr. Crepsley said, and you ignoring me at school. You're my best friend, Darren. The only person I can really talk to. If you break up our friendship, I don't know what I'll do.
He started to cry. I watched him for a few seconds, torn between fear and sympathy. Then my nobler self got the better of me and I put an arm around his shoulder.
It's okay, I said. I'll still be your friend. Oh, come on, Steve. Quit crying, okay?
He tried, but it took a while for the tears to stop.
I must look a right fool,
he finally sniffed.
Nonsense, I said. I'm the fool. I should have stood by you. I was a coward. I never stopped to imagine what you must be going through. I was only thinking of myself and Madam...
I pulled a face and stopped talking. Steve stared at me curiously.
What were you going to say?
He asked.
Nothing, I said. It was a slip of the tongue.
He grunted. You're a bad liar, Shan. Always were. Tell me what it was you were about to let slip. I studied his face, wondering if I should tell him. I knew I shouldn't, that it could only mean trouble, but I felt sorry for him. Besides, I needed to tell someone. I wanted to show off my wonderful pet and the great tricks we could do.
Can you keep a secret?
I asked.
Of course,
he snorted.
This is a big one. You can't tell anyone, okay? If I tell you, it has to stay between the two of us. If you ever talk, you'll talk about me and Mr. Crepsley,
Steve said, grinning.
You have me over a barrel. No matter what you tell me, you know I can't grasp, even if I wanted to. What's a big secret?
Wait a minute, I said. I got off the bed and opened the door to the room.
Mom!
I shouted.
Yes!
Came her muffled reply.
I'm showing Steve my flute,
I yelled.
I'm going to teach him how to play it, but only if we're not disturbed, okay?
Okay,
she called back. I closed the door and smiled at Steve. He looked puzzled.
A flute?
He asked.
Your big secret is a flute?
That's part of it, I said.
Listen, do you remember Madame Octa, Mr. Crepsley's spider?
Of course,
he said.
I wasn't paying much attention to her when she was on, but I don't think anyone could ever forget a creature like that. Those hairy legs, phew.
I opened the door to the wardrobe while he was speaking and got out the cage. His eyes squinted when he saw it, then widened.
That's not what I think it is it?
He asked. That depends, I said, whipping off the cloth. If you think it's a deadly performing spider, you're right.
Hells bells,
he gasped, almost falling off the bed in shock.
Wow!
I was delighted with his reaction. I stood over the cage, smiling like a proud father. Madame Octa lay on the floor, quiet as ever, paying no attention to me or Steve.
She's awesome,
Steve said, crawling closer for a better look.
She looks just the same as the one in the circus. I can't believe you found one that looks so similar. Where'd you get her? A pet shop? From a zoo?
My smile slipped.
I got her from the Cirque du Freak, of course, I said uneasily.
From the freak show?
He asked, face crinkling.
They were selling live spiders. I didn't see any. How much did she cost?
I shook my head and said, I didn't buy her, Steve.
Can't you guess? Don't you understand?
Understand what?
He asked.
That's not a similar spider,
I said.
That's the same one. It's Madame Octa.
He stared at me as though he hadn't heard what I'd said. I was about to repeat it, but he spoke up before I could.
The same one?
He asked in a slow, trembling voice.
Yes,
I said.
You mean that's Madame Octa? The Madame Octa? Yes,
I said again, laughing at his shock.
That's Mr. Crepsley Spider.
Steve, what's wrong? How many times do I have to say it for you to...
Wait a minute,
he snapped, shaking his head.
If this is really Madame Octa, how did you get your hands on her? Did you find her outside? Did they sell her off?
Nobody would sell a great spider like this, I said.
That's what I thought,
Steve agreed.
So how did...
He left the question hanging in the air.
I stole her, I said, puffing up proudly. I went back to the theatre that Tuesday morning, crept in, found where she was and snuck out with her. I left a note telling Mr. Crepsley not to come looking for her or I'd report his being a vampire to the police.
You...
Steve was gasping. His face had turned white and he looked like he was about to collapse.
Are you all right?
I asked.
You... Imbecile!
He roared.
You lunatic! You moron! Hey!
I shouted, upset.
Idiot! Dumbo! Cretin!
He yelled.
Do you realise what you've done? Have you any idea what sort of trouble you're in?
Huh?
I asked, bewildered.
You stole a vampire spider!
Steve shouted.
You stole from a member of the undead! What do you think he's gonna do when he catches up with you, Darren? Spank your bottom and give you 50 lines? Tell your parents and make them ground you? We're talking about a vampire! He'll rip out your throat and feed you to the spider! He'll tear you to pieces and...
No, he won't, I said calmly.
Of course he will,
Steve replied.
No, I said, he won't. Because he won't find me. I stole the spider the Tuesday before last, so he's had nearly 2 whole weeks to track me down, but there hasn't been a sign of him. He left with the circus and won't ever come back, not if he knows what's good for him.
I don't know,
Steve said.
Vampires have long memories. He might return when you're grown up and with kids of your own.
I'll worry about that when and if it happens, I said. I've got away with it for the time being. I wasn't sure I would. I thought he'd track me down and kill me. But I did. So quit with the names, all right?
You're something else,
he laughed, shaking his head.
I thought I was daring, but stealing a vampire's pet. I never would have thought you had it in you. What made you do it?
I had to have her,
I told him.
I saw her on stage and knew I'd do anything to get her.
Then I discovered Mr. Crepsley was a vampire and realised I could blackmail him. It's wrong, I know, but he's a vampire, so it's not too bad, is it, stealing from someone bad? In a way, it's a good thing. Right?
Steve laughed.
I don't know if it's good or bad, he said. All I know is, if he ever comes looking for her, I wouldn't want to be in your shoes.
He studied the spider again. He stuck his face up close to the cage, but not close enough for her to strike him, and watched her belly bulging in and out.
Have you let her out of the cage yet?
He asked.
Every day, I said.
I picked up the flute and gave a toot. Madame Octa jumped forward a couple of centimetres. Steve yelped and fell back on his bum. I howled with laughter.
You can control her?
He gasped.
I can make her do everything Mr. Crepsley did,
I said, trying not to sound boastful.
It's quite easy. She's perfectly safe as long as you concentrate. But if you let your thoughts wander for even a second...
I drew a finger across my throat and made a choking noise.
Have you let her make a web over your lips?
Steve asked. His eyes were shining brightly.
Not yet, I said. I'm worried about letting her in my mouth. The thought of her slipping down my throat terrifies me. Besides, I'd need a partner to control her while she spun the web. And so far, I've been alone.
So far, Steve grinned.
But not any more.
He got up and clapped his hands.
Let's do it. Teach me how to use that fancy tin whistle and let me at her. I'm not afraid to let her in my mouth. Come on, let's go, let's go, let's go. Go, 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 go!
I couldn't ignore excitement like that. I knew it was unwise to involve Steve with the spider on such short notice. I should have made sure he got to know her better, but I ignored common sense and gave in to his wishes. I told him he couldn't play the flute, not until he'd practiced, but he could play with Madame Octa while I was controlling her. I ran him through the tricks we were going to do and made sure he understood everything. Being quiet is vital, I said. Don't say anything. Don't even whistle loudly, because if you disturb my attention and I lose control of her...
Yeah, yeah,
Steve sighed.
I know. Don't worry. I can be quiet as a mouse when I want.
When he was ready, I unlocked Madame Octa's cage and began playing. She advanced at my order. I could hear Steve drawing in his breath. A little scared now that she was out in the open, but he gave no sign that he wanted to stop. So I went on blowing and started her off on her routine. I let her do a lot of stuff by herself before allowing her near Steve. We'd developed a great understanding over the last week or so. The spider had grown used to my mind and the way it thought, and had learned to obey my commands almost before I finished sending them. I'd learned that she could work from the shortest of instructions. I only had to use a few words to prompt her into action. Steve watched the show in total silence. He nearly clapped a few times, but caught himself before his hands could meet and produce a noise. Instead of clapping, he gave me the thumbs-up sign and mouthed the words, great, super, brilliant, and so on. When the time came for Steve to take part in the act, I gave him the nod that we had agreed upon. He gulped, took a deep breath, then nodded back. He rose to his feet and stepped forward, keeping to the side so I wouldn't lose sight of Madame Octa. Then he sank to his knees and waited. I played a new tune and sent a new set of orders. Madame Octa sat still, listening. When she knew what I wanted, she started creeping towards Steve. I saw him shivering and licking his lips. I was going to cancel the act and send the spider back to her cage, but then he stopped shaking and became calmer, so I continued. He gave a small shudder when she started crawling up the leg of his trousers. But that was a natural response. I still got the shake sometimes when I felt her hairy legs brushing against my skin. I made Madame Octa crawl up the back of his neck and tickle his ears with her legs. He giggled softly, and the last traces of his fear vanished. I felt more confident now that he was calmer, and so moved the spider round to the front of his face, where she built small cobwebs over his eyes and slid down his nose and bounced off his lips. Steve was enjoying it, and so was I. There were lots of new things I was able to do now that I had a partner. She was on his right shoulder, preparing to slide down his arm, when the door opened and Annie walked in. Normally, Annie never enters my room before knocking. She's a great kid, not like other brats her age, and nearly always knocks politely and waits for a reply. But that evening, by sheer bad luck, she happened to barge in.
"Hey, Darren, where's my..."
she started to say, then stopped. She saw Steve and the monstrous spider on his shoulder, its fangs glinting as though getting ready to bite, and she did the natural thing. She screamed. The sound alarmed me. My head turned, the flute slid from my lips, and my concentration snapped. My link to Madame Octa disintegrated. She shook her head, took a couple of quick steps closer to Steve's throat, then bared her fangs and appeared to grin. Steve roared with fear and surged to his feet. He swiped at the spider, but she ducked and his hand missed. Before he could try again, Madame Octa lowered her head, quick as a snake, and sank her poison-tipped fangs deep into his neck. Chapter 21. Steve stiffened as soon as the spider bit him. His yell stopped dead in his throat, his lips turned blue, his eyes snapped wide open. For what seemed an eternity, though it couldn't have been more than 3 or 4 seconds, he tottered on his feet, then he crumpled to the floor like a scarecrow. The fall saved him. As with the goat at the Cirque du Freak show, Madame Octa's first bite knocked Steve out but didn't kill him straight off. I saw her moving along his neck before he fell, searching for the right spot, preparing for the second killer bite. The fall disturbed her. She slipped from Steve's neck, and it took her a few seconds to climb back up. Those seconds were all I needed. I was in a state of shock, but the sight of her emerging over his shoulder like some terrible arachnid sunrise spurred me into life. I stooped for the flute, jammed it almost through the back of my throat, and blew the loudest note of my entire life. "Stop!" I screamed inside my head, and Madame Octa leapt about half a meter into the air. "Back inside the cage!" I commanded, and she hopped down from Steve's body and sped across the floor. As soon as she passed the bars of the door, I lunged forward and slammed it shut. With Madame Octa taken care of, my attention turned to Steve. Annie was still screaming, but I couldn't worry about her until I'd seen to my poisoned friend. "Steve?" I asked, crawling close to his ear, praying for an answer. "Are you okay, Steve?" There was no reply. He was breathing, so I knew he was alive, but that was all. There was nothing else he could do. He couldn't talk or move his arms. He wasn't even able to blink. I became aware of Annie standing behind me. She'd stopped screaming, but I could feel her shaking.
Is he dead?
She asked in a tiny voice.
"Of course not," I snapped. "You can see him breathing, can't you? Look at his belly and chest."
"But why can't he move?"
she asked.
"He's paralyzed," I told her. "The spider injected him with poison which stops his limbs working. It's like putting him to sleep, except his brain's still active and he can see and hear everything."
I didn't know if this was true. I hoped it was. If the poison had left the heart and lungs alone, it might also have skipped his brain. But if it had got into his skull, the thought was too terrible to consider.
"Steve, I'm going to help you up," I said. "I think if we move you around, the poison will wear off."
I stuck my arms around Steve's waist and hauled him to his feet. He was heavy, but I took no notice of the weight. I dragged him around the room, shaking his arms and legs, talking to him as I went, telling him he was going to be all right. There wasn't enough poison in one bite to kill him. He would recover. After 10 minutes of this, there was no change, and I was too tired to carry him any longer. I dropped him on the bed, then carefully arranged his body so he would be comfortable. His eyelids were open. They looked weird and were scaring me, so I closed them. But then he looked like a corpse, so I opened them again.
"Will he be all right?"
Annie asked.
"Of course he will," I said, trying to sound positive. "The poison will wear off after a while and he'll be right as rain. It's only a matter of time."
I don't think she believed me, but she said nothing, only sat on the edge of the bed and watched Steve's face like a hawk.
I began wondering why Mum hadn't been up to investigate. I crept over to the open door and listened at the top of the stairs. I could hear the washing machine rumbling in the kitchen below. That explained it. Our washing machine is old and clunky. You can't hear anything over the noise it makes if you're in the kitchen and it's turned on. Annie was no longer on the bed when I returned. She was down on the floor studying Madame Octa.
"It's the spider from the freak show, isn't it?"
she asked. "Yes," I admitted.
"The poisonous one?"
"Yes."
"How did you get it?"
she asked. "That's not important," I said, blushing.
"How did she get loose?"
Annie asked. "I let her out," I said.
"You what?"
"It wasn't the first time," I told her. "I've had her for nearly 2 weeks. I've played with her lots of times. It's perfectly safe as long as there are no noises. If you hadn't come barging in when you did, she would have been..."
"No, you don't,"
she growled.
"You aren't laying the blame on me. Why didn't you tell me about her? If I'd known, I wouldn't have come busting in."
"I was going to," I said. "I was waiting until I was sure it was safe. Then Steve came and..." I couldn't continue. I stuck the cage back in the wardrobe where I wouldn't have to look at Madame Octa. I joined Annie by the bed and studied Steve's motionless form. We sat silently for almost an hour, just watching.
"I don't think he's going to recover,"
she finally said. "Give it more time," I pleaded.
"I don't think time will help,"
she insisted.
"If he was going to recover, he should be moving a bit by now."
"What do you know about it?" I asked roughly. "You're a child, you know nothing."
"That's right,"
she agreed calmly.
"But you don't know any more about it than me, do you?"
I shook my head unhappily.
"So stop pretending you do,"
she said. She laid a hand on my arm and smiled bravely to show she wasn't trying to make me feel bad.
"We have to tell Mum,"
she said.
"We have to get her up here. She might know what to do."
"And if she doesn't?" I asked.
"Then we have to take him to a hospital,"
Annie said. I knew she was right. I'd known it all along. I just didn't want to admit it. "Let's give it another quarter of an hour," I said. "If he hasn't moved by then, we call her."
"Quarter of an hour?"
she asked uncertainly. "Not a minute more," I promised.
"Okay,"
she agreed. We sat in silence again and watched our friend. I thought about Madame Octa and how I was going to explain this to Mum, to the doctors, to the police. Would they believe me when I told them Mr. Crepsley was a vampire? I doubted it. They'd think I was lying. They might throw me in jail. They might say since the spider was mine, I was to blame. They might charge me with murder and lock me away. I checked my watch. 3 minutes to go. No change in Steve. "Annie, I need to ask a favour," I said. She looked at me suspiciously.
"What?"
"I don't want you to mention Madame Octa," I said.
"Are you crazy?"
she shouted.
"How else are you going to explain what's happened?"
"I don't know," I admitted. "I'll tell them I was out of the room. The bite marks are tiny. They look like small bee stings and are going down all the time. The doctors might not even notice them."
"We can't do that,"
Annie said.
"They might need to examine the spider. They might..."
"Annie, if Steve dies, I'll be blamed," I said softly. "There are parts to this I can't tell you, that I can't tell anybody. All I can say is if the worst happens, I'll be left carrying the can. Do you know what they do to murderers?"
"You're too young to be tried for murder,"
she said, but sounded uncertain.
"No, I'm not,"
I told her.
"I'm too young to go to a real prison, but they have special places for children. They'd hold me in one of those until I turned 18 and then..." "Please, Annie,"
I started to cry.
"I don't want to go to jail."
She started crying too. We held on to each other and sobbed like a couple of babies.
"I don't want them to take you away,"
she wept.
"I don't want to lose you."
"Then do you promise not to tell?"
I asked.
"Will you go back to your bedroom and pretend you saw and heard none of this?"
She nodded sadly.
But not if I think the truth can save him,
she added.
If the doctors say they can't save him unless they find what bit him, I'm telling, okay?
Okay,
I agreed. She got to her feet and headed for the door. She stopped in the middle of the room, turned, came back, and kissed me on the forehead.
I love you, Darren,
she said.
But you were a fool to bring that spider into this house, and if Steve dies, I think you are the one who should be blamed.
Then she ran from the room, sobbing. I waited a few minutes, holding Steve's hand, begging him to recover, to show some sign of life. When my prayers weren't answered, I got to my feet, opened the window to explain how the mystery attacker got in, took a deep breath, then ran downstairs, screaming for my mother.
End of Disc 3. Disc 4.
Chapter 22. The ambulance nurses asked my mother if Steve was diabetic or epileptic. She wasn't sure, but didn't think so. They also asked about allergies and the like, but she explained that she wasn't his mother and didn't know. I thought they'd take us with them in the ambulance, but they said there wasn't room. They got the number of Steve's phone and the name of his mum, but she wasn't home. One of the nurses asked my mother if she'd drive after them to hospital to fill in as many of the forms as she could so they could make a start. She agreed and bundled me and Annie into the car. Dad still wasn't home, so she rang him on his mobile to explain where we'd be. He said he'd come straight over. That was a miserable ride. I sat in the back, trying not to meet Annie's eye, knowing I should tell the truth, but too afraid to. What made it even worse was, I knew if I was the one lying in a coma, Steve would own up immediately.
"What happened in there?"
Mum asked over her shoulder. She was driving as fast as she could without breaking the speed limit, so wasn't able to look back at me. I was glad. I don't think I could have lied straight to her face.
"I'm not sure," I said. "We were chatting. Then I had to go to the toilet. When I got back..." "You didn't see anything?"
she asked.
"No,"
I lied, feeling my ears reddening with shame.
"I can't understand it,"
she muttered.
"He felt so stiff, and his skin was turning blue. I thought he was dead."
"I think he was bitten,"
Annie said. I nearly gave her a dig in the ribs, but at the last second remembered I was depending on her to keep my secret.
"Bitten?"
Mum asked.
"There were a couple of marks on his neck,"
Annie said.
"I saw them," Mum said. "But I don't think that's it, dear."
"Why not?"
Annie asked.
"If a snake or a spider got in and bit him..."
She glanced over at me and blushed a little, recalling her promise.
"A spider?"
Mum shook her head.
"No, dear, spiders don't go around biting people and sending them into shock, not around here."
"So what was it?"
Annie asked.
"I'm not sure,"
Mum replied.
"Maybe he ate something that didn't agree with him, or had a heart attack."
"Children don't have heart attacks,"
Annie snorted.
"They do," Mum said. "It's rare, but it can happen. Still, the doctors will sort all that out. They know more about these things than we do."
I wasn't used to hospitals, so I spent some time looking around while Mum was filling in the forms. It was the whitest place I'd ever seen. White walls, white floors, white uniforms. It wasn't very busy, but there was a buzz to the place, a sound of bed springs and coughing, machines humming, knives slicing, doctors speaking softly. We didn't say much while sitting there. Mum said Steve had been admitted and was being examined, but it might be a while before they discovered what was wrong.
They sounded optimistic, she said.
Annie was thirsty, so Mum sent me with her to get drinks from the machine round the corner. Annie glanced around while I was putting in the coins to make sure nobody could overhear.
How long are you going to wait?
She asked. Until I hear what they have to say, I told her. We'll let them examine him. Hopefully they'll know what sort of poison it is and be able to cure him by themselves.
And if they can't?
She asked. Then I tell them, I promised.
What if he dies before that?
She asked softly.
He won't, I said.
But what if...
He won't, I snapped. Don't talk like that. Don't even think like that. We have to hope for the best. We must believe he will pull through. Mum and Dad have always told us good thoughts help make sick people better, haven't they? He needs us to believe in him.
He needs the truth more,
she grumbled, but let the matter drop. We took the drinks back to the bench and drank in silence. Dad arrived not long after, still in his work clothes. He kissed Mum and Annie and squeezed my shoulder manfully. His dirty hands left grease marks on my T-shirt, but that didn't bother me.
Any news?
He asked.
None yet, Mum said. They're examining him. It could be hours before we hear anything.
What happened to him, Angela?
Dad asked.
We don't know yet, Mum said. We'll have to wait and see.
I hate waiting, Dad grumbled. But since he had no other choice, he had to, the same as the rest of us. Nothing further happened for a couple of hours, until Steve's mum arrived. Her face was white like Steve's, and her lips were pinched together. She made straight for me, grabbed me by the shoulders, and shook me hard.
What have you done to him?
She screeched.
Have you hurt my boy? Have you killed my Steve?
Here, stop that!
Dad gasped. Steve's mum ignored him.
What have you done?
She screamed again and shook me even harder. I tried to say nothing, but my teeth were chattering.
What have you done? What have you done?
She repeated, then suddenly stopped shaking me, let go, and collapsed to the floor where she bawled like a baby. Mum got off the bench and crouched beside Mrs. Leonard. She stroked the back of her head and whispered kind words to her, then helped her up and sat down with her. Mrs. Leonard was still crying and was now moaning about what a bad mother she'd been and how much Steve hated her.
You two, go and play somewhere else,
Mum said to Annie and me. We started away.
Darren!
Mum called me back.
Don't take any notice of what she was saying. She doesn't blame you. She's just afraid.
I nodded miserably. What would Mum say if she knew Mrs. Leonard was right and I was to blame? Annie and me found a couple of arcade games which kept us busy. I didn't think I'd be able to play, but after a few minutes I forgot about Steve and the hospital and got caught up in the games. It was nice to slip away from the worries of the real world for a while, and if I hadn't run out of coins, I might have stayed there all night. When we returned to our chairs, Mrs. Leonard had calmed down and was off with Mum filling out forms. Annie and me sat, and the waiting began all over again. Annie began yawning about 10 o'clock, and that set me off too. Mum took one look at us and ordered us home. I started to argue, but she cut me short.
You can't do any good here, she said. I'll ring as soon as I hear anything, even if it's the middle of the night, okay?
I hesitated. This would be my final chance to mention the spider. I came very close to spilling the beans, but I was tired and couldn't find the words.
Okay,
I said glumly, then left. Dad drove us home. I wondered what he'd do if I told him about the spider, Mr. Crepsley, and the rest. He would have punished me, I'm sure, but that's not why I didn't tell him. I kept quiet because I knew he'd be ashamed of the way I'd lied and put my own well-being before Steve's. I was afraid he'd hate me. Annie was asleep by the time we got home. Dad lifted her in from the back seat and took her to bed. I walked slowly up to my room and got undressed. I kept cursing myself under my breath. Dad looked in as I was putting my clothes away.
Will you be okay? He asked.
I nodded.
Steve will recover, he said. I'm sure of it. The doctors know their stuff. They'll bring him round.
I nodded again, not trusting myself to answer. Dad stood in the doorway a moment longer, then sighed, left, and stomped downstairs to his study. I was hanging my trousers up in the wardrobe when I noticed Madame Octa's cage. Slowly, I pulled it out. She was lying in the middle, breathing easily, calm as ever. I studied the colourful spider and wasn't impressed by what I saw. She was bright, yes, but ugly, hairy, and nasty. I began to hate her. She was the real villain, the one who bit Steve for no good reason. I had fed her and cared for her and played with her. This was how she repaid me.
"You bloody monster!"
I snarled, shaking the cage.
"You ungrateful creep!"
I gave the cage another shake. Her legs gripped the bars tightly. This made me madder, and I yanked the cage roughly from side to side, trying to make her lose her grip, hoping to hurt her. I spun about in a circle, whirling the cage around by the handle. I was cursing, calling her every name under the sun, wishing she was dead, wishing I'd never set eyes on her, wishing I had the guts to take her out of the cage and squeeze her to death. Finally, as my rage reached bursting point, I hurled the cage as far away from me as possible. I wasn't looking where I was throwing, and got a shock when I saw it sail through the open window and out into the night. I watched it flying away, then hurried after it. I was scared it would hit the ground and break open, because I knew if the doctors weren't able to save Steve by themselves, they might be able to with the help of Madame Octa. If they studied her, they might find out how to cure him. But if she escaped... I rushed to the window. I was too late to grab for the cage, but at least I could see where it landed. I watched as it floated out and down, praying it wouldn't break. It seemed to take ages to fall. Just before it hit the ground, a hand darted out from the shadows of the night and snatched it from the air.
A hand?
I leaned forward quickly for a better view. It was a dark night, and at first I couldn't see who was down there. But then the person stepped forward, and all was revealed. First, I saw his wrinkly hands holding the cage, then his long red clothes, then his cropped orange hair, then his long, ugly scar, and finally his sharp, toothy grin. It was Mr. Crepsley, the vampire, and he was smiling up at me.
Chapter 23. I stood by the window, expecting him to turn into a bat and come flying up. But he did nothing, apart from shake the cage gently to make sure Madame Octa was all right. Then, still smiling, he turned and walked away. Within a matter of seconds, he'd been swallowed from sight by the night. I shut the window and fled to the safety of my bed, where my mind turned inside out with questions. How long had he been down there?